Happy New Year and welcome to... to the first Start Me Up podcast of 2019. I am Kimberly Johnson, and sitting right beside me in Oakland, California is Stephanie Walton. I'm in D.C., she's in Oakland, but you know, we're right next to each other.
And we're always, we are right always in sync with each other, despite our locations.
Indeed. Let's see where, I mean, we've got such a cool show today. We've got Scott Dworkin on and we can't wait to talk to him. But before we do, let me just, tell you, on January 30th, we're going to be talking to Molly Jong Fast.
And, yeah.
We're excited about that. We've also got lined up for February. We've got, Charlotte Clymer and Jen Kirkman. So be sure to listen to those shows when they come up. And then, also, you know, we want you to support the Start Me Up podcast. So you can become a patron, a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. You could donate anything or subscribe for any amount, whether it's $1, $5, $10, but $5 will get you into and another thing, which is usually Steph and me talking about a variety of subjects. Sometimes it's really personal stuff. Sometimes it's just fun stuff, like, you know, the women that we admire and who's inspired us along the way. But anyway, so we would love it if you would support the show at patreon.com/startmeup. And today, our show is brought to you by Willow Grove. So yes, we want to talk to you about their amazing products.
Amazing products. You, first of all, you can find them at thewillowgrove.com. Okay. This is all certified organic and natural body products that make your skin feel amazing, that make your home smell good just by sitting in the room, like a bar of soap in my
room. The bathroom, like, too.
Yeah, it everything smells fantastic. Everything is, like I said, natural and certified organic. So you're not putting crap on your skin that can seep into your skin. You're just putting like the most exquisite lotions on your body that never feel greasy.
Never. And that's the truth. It never feels greasy. Everything, there's like paraben free. It's all natural. So it never feels tacky or greasy. It just feels moisturized.
Just moisturized. And it's because of what they put in it. Scott must be loving this on the other side. Ooh, we're going to get Scott some lotion. We're going to get him all slathered up too. They not just soap, not just lotions. They make beautiful eye pillows filled with organic flaxseed that come in four different scents: lavender, mint, eucalyptus, and sleepy time. I can't go without that. That's how I get like my Zen moment. And literally it's just a moment every day, but it's that pillow. And now my family fights over the pillow. So we would appreciate it if you supported Willow Grove. Try them out, thewillowgrove.com. You can enter code SMU2018 to get 15% off of all products. And they've got a $5 flat shipping rate on orders under 50. Anywhere in the continental U.S. over $50 orders, get free shipping in the continental U.S. What do you think of that?
Yes, and also I just want to add that the Citrus Sensations lotion is just divine. If you like lavender, the lavender smells great, and I love the lavender, but I have a preference for citrus, so FYI.
Well, the mint lotion.
The mint is really nice.
I was having a tough time sleeping the other night, and I kept... like I woke up and I smelled this beautiful thing and I'm like, it's the lotion, because I put it on my bedside table, gave myself a little squirt. I hit my hands and my feet with it every night before bed. It's amazing. Okay.
Okay. So that's the willowgrove.com. And what is the code that they put in?
Code is SMU for Start Me Up. SMU 2018 for 15% off of all products.
Yes. So definitely visit them. It's Willow. What is it? Thewillowgrove.com. All right. Cool beans. So now we are going to get to Scott Dworkin. Scott, hello.
What is going on?
Thanks for being on our show today. We're really excited to talk to you.
No, thanks for having me on. And you know, just in keep in mind, like when I go on TV, they cake the makeup on. So getting the makeup off is always important to me. So
you need some Willow Grove lotion to kind of like get it off.
There it is.
You give yourself a nice cleanse, and then you coat your skin with the non-greasy, paraben-free Willow Grove. We'll take care of you, Scott. We're gonna hook you up. I like to refer to Scott, and I've said this to Kimberly before, and I've used this term before, but I don't use it liberally. And it's because I think you got to earn this. And I view Scott Dworkin as a guardian of democracy. And because
which means when he's a god.
He's a god. I told my husband this morning, we kiss, I take the kids, he goes to the office, and which is in the backyard. And so I said, give him a kiss. I go, we're interviewing Scott Dworkin today. And he goes, ooh. And like, it is such a pleasure and a privilege, because Scott, you have done so much, not single-handedly. I know there's a crew of you over there at the Democratic Coalition, but it's important work that you do. And I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us, because it makes me feel better.
Keep going. I like this.
Praise Scott Dworkin for an hour.
If you just go hit Scott's Twitter feed from this morning.
Yeah.
And know, like, we're not mincing words. He's not messing around. He lays it out there. And so we have questions galore for you this morning, Scott. But, you know, it would be nice if you could make us feel better. It's going to be hard to do. But let's talk about, first of all, Kimberly, can I start with
my first question?
I want your take on the shutdown, and I want your take on the smackdown that Speaker Pelosi delivered this morning in writing to Trump.
Sure. Regarding the shutdown, I think that Trump is going to have to fold soon. And I think that the senators are going to make him via a bipartisan letter that they're putting together. I'm not sure if the letter will ever get released, but the White House energy right now is on lobbying members of Congress to not sign on to this letter instead of reopening the government. I think personally that if you wanted to hurt America, if you really wanted to hurt us, and you didn't want to have your fingerprints as much on it, this is how you would do it. Hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that there's other people involved here that are looking at the interests of Russia and other adversaries, and they're reveling in this. Mm-hmm. So I think this is much deeper than just this, because it's nonsense. It does not help America. But at the same time, this is what the Tea Party and Pence have wanted for years.
Yeah.
So this is their goal, you know, try and shut down the IRS, try and rid of a lot of federal agencies and try and shut down the government. And mm-hmm. They're successful right now. The repercussions of it are going to be devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to feel that even after we reopen the government, we're still going to feel some after effect. Today with Speaker Pelosi, she told... Let me just make this clear. She did not ask Trump anything.
Mm-hmm.
She told Trump, we need to move this, your State of the Union, and you know, or you can submit it in writing. But the basic of it is, and I'm a former advance guy, you can't just get the security together for something this big where everybody, you know, who leads the federal government in America is in one room, without there being weeks of advance,
mm-hmm.
At least a week. And so what Speaker Pelosi is doing is not only smart in regards to the politics of it, it actually is smart security-wise, because it really is a security threat, because they're overextended as it is. There's already thousands of FBI agents and others that are not getting paid right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's going to be a lot of different problems that we could encounter. And the last thing we need is to overextend ourselves. So I think it was a brilliant play. But at the same time, the speaker is very serious about it. It mm-hmm. It's not a stunt. It's not a political stunt. It is a serious concern of hers. Excuse me. It is a serious concern of hers. And I think it's going to be something that Trump tries to frame as a political stunt. But the fact is he has to be invited to deliver the State of the Union. And I think, basically she's starting to move to the end of maybe you're not invited.
Hmm.
And so that could happen. But
yeah, but then couldn't he just do what he did the last time and invite people to the invite reporters to the Oval Office and basically give his own version of State of the Union?
Right. Oh, of course. And I'm sure that he'll do some kind of press conference today to distract from this mm-hmm. or something, some kind of nonsense.
Right.
But I really do think that the shutdown, it just doesn't add up. It just doesn't make any sense. And so, you know, I'm just glad that Democrats are drawing a line in the sand, at least seemingly. I think some of them are willing to meet with him today. But the, you know, the best response is, you know, from Democrats is if he wants to meet with us, you know, no, but we're happy to meet with you after you reopen the government.
Yeah.
Because right. It's on him. It's on him and it's on McConnell. McConnell's worried about reelection. That's why he's deferring to Trump. Otherwise, if he wasn't up for reelection, the government would be reopened. He's not even considering 3 weeks of trying to, you know, reopen the government for 3 weeks. You know, this is nonsense. And, you know, like I've said before, this is the redefining treason.
Oh, my yes. God. You know, there's just so many things going
treason.
Through my, yeah, going through my mind as you're talking about this. And one of the questions that I have for you is, I believe it was Ted Koppel wrote a piece in The Washington Post yesterday that said that, and this is kind of skipping ahead, but, you know, going back to the idea that the FBI is investigating him for being a Russian agent, which finally now the media is talking about that, whereas before I think they didn't want to say anything specific in that direction because they didn't want to appear that, you know, if they were hurling accusations. But this New York Times story that came down a couple of days ago saying that the FBI is investigating him as an agent of Russia gives them that opportunity. So I just wanted to ask you a question, if you agree with Ted Koppel, because his basic take on it, and I don't know if you read it, is that, you know, when it comes time, Trump isn't going to leave. And this is actually something my father is concerned about, who is a Democrat, and he's concerned that Trump will, you know, do the whatever, if it's a national emergency, and declare martial law, and then because of the martial law, whatever emergency, you know, that he's concocted, that they're going to put elections off or, you know, not hold any elections or something. What do you think about that?
I don't think that'll happen. But, you know, we need to be prepared for anything.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see that as a possibility. I think he's cornered right now. He's interested in seeing what evidence they have against him. You know, there's a multitude of crimes that he's committed. And so I think the FBI is at the point right now, it's not if he was a Russian agent, it's to what extent
yeah.
he was a Russian agent and how much has he acted like that since. You know, the fact that he was talking about leaving NATO, did that correspond with, you know, his talks with Putin? You know, like were those things that were advised of him? You know, why was he hiding notes from Putin's meetings? Like all these things are starting to trickle out to ease Americans into the fact that he is a Russian agent. And it, again, it could be as simple as them having a tape of Don Jr. saying, yeah, we'll lift sanctions if you give us Hillary's emails.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Right,
it doesn't have to be the Pete, like all this other, you know, jazz. It does not have to be that salacious.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be one sentence. And I can guarantee you that since they have the most advanced spy technology in the world, I would assume that every meeting that they had ever, including with Trump, with unscreened, you know, devices that they could record the meeting. So, you know, he may not need we may not need the recording of Trump's notes because Putin probably has a recording of those meetings.
Of course.
Wow.
Yeah,
and there's no reason for them to meet. Keep that in mind. Like that is only for positive PR for Putin and negative PR for Trump. It is not. It does not help the United States for him to have met with them ever. Every time that is just gives Putin another leg up. And you see the nonsense today. You know, we had U.S. troops. We don't know the number yet, but there was a suicide bombing where U.S. troops were killed in Syria, and you have Pence going out saying that we've won the war in Syria an hour later without saying condolences or even citing the matter, even though on Twitter his spokesman had already talked about it. So this is, you know, I think that everything is going to catch up with them. I think keep in mind that there's tens of thousands of people that are professionals working against them only for the fact, not in regards to a deep state or anything like that. They're just trying to protect the United States, and the biggest, most imminent threat and danger to the United States continues to be and will be as long as he's in office, Trump.
Yes.
And second in command, Pence. Mm-hmm. Because I would assume that Trump is the spokesman, Pence is the legislator. Interesting. And so, you know, they're a tandem team. Pence kind of rolls his eyes, but he loves the distraction. While they rip apart America, you know, Trump is distracting everybody from everything else.
Right.
He's a Russian agent. I mean, like I've been saying that since.
Yeah,
since
I mean,
one.
I believe it the same.
If there's no other way to view it. I mean, right. Given everything you just talked about and so much more that wasn't said. Now, one thing that struck me, and it's not talked about as widely as well, Kimberly and I have been saying it forever, but Pence is complicit. Pence is in on all of this. And as you said, he's the legislator. Trump is the spokesperson. So it's a foregone conclusion where you're concerned that Pence is compromised by Russia as well.
Yeah, I mean, he had his own Russian meetings. He met with the Russian Orthodox Church while in office.
Yes.
He met with Kislyak. He helped run the transition. He was aware of him being tied to Turkish and Russian intelligence, mm-hmm. and being a paid foreign agent for both of those countries through a notarized letter that I sent to the deputy NSA and a notarized letter that was sent directly to Pence from Congressman Cummings on November 17th of 2016, outlining everything. My complaint against Flynn was for violating the Foreign Agents Registration Act, the FARA. So he, again, and that was reported on in Washington Post and other newspapers,
yes.
in November of 2016. And then again, it came back out. It resurfaced 2 days before he was fired. But the fact of the matter is there's a paper trail that proves that Pence knew, because, again, these are pieces of paper that he had to have received, because you're not going to miss out on a formal complaint, like a legal complaint against your NSA that accuses him of that, mm-hmm. combined with the fact that Congressman Cummings literally sent a letter,
yes.
directly to you. While you're running the transition, or before you're running the well, right at the beginning of the transition.
Go ahead. Finish.
No. Great. Awesome.
So Pence also had meetings with the Russian Orthodox Church, and he also met with a pass-through, a guy that is linked to Putin from Greece, who, of course, met with Papadopoulos before the election and after the election. As well. So there's different meetings that are there. There's different links between his family, former oil company, and other things that he's done in the past with donors. They're not as clear and they're not as tight. But, you know, his links to Manafort are clear and are pretty tight. So, you know, I think that he's going to end up, you know, getting the lighter end of this, but he's still culpable for his knowledge and then lying to the American people. And I think that's enough to remove him from office as well.
Oh my God.
So let me ask you, I mean, I'm so complete. I mean, I see certain scenarios playing out, but, you know, we've got the issue of impeachment, and then it comes to, if and when he gets impeached, will he be asked to leave by the Republicans? A, do you think that will happen? Or do you think that he'll be primaried? And then if he is primaried, do you think that he'll lose? And I'm just also wondering how Pence would come into this, because let's say Mueller's report drops and we're able to see it, because I don't, you know, God, there's so many things here I just want to get to. And it's like, I don't know what's going to happen with Barr and what he would reveal if he is confirmed. But I mean, if he is impeached, do you think Republicans will ask him to leave in the Senate? Do you think he'll be primaried? And then where does Pence all fall into this as being, you know, getting him out?
I don't think that Barr or anybody else is going to decide what happens to the Mueller report or reports or whatever he comes up with. I think Mueller is going to make sure that it sees the light of day. I really don't. I don't believe, based on, you know, everybody I've spoken with, that Mueller would spend this much time on it, be this serious, and be this serious of investigation, and let someone, you know, new, random, that is partisan, help decide. I think that he knows exactly what he's doing. He's about a year ahead of us, and we don't we don't know what he knows. I mean, the more redactions that they have on all this court paperwork that comes out, it makes it clear that there's multiple ongoing investigations directly into Trump, Trump Organization, Trump Foundation, you know, everything across the board, his casinos that are still operational in Panama and China and other countries. You know, it really is, he's cornered right now. So my guess is that before any of this happens, he'll be presented with a sort of here's what we have on you. Here's what we're going to charge you with. And if you resign, then we will, you know, give you lesser charges. You'll basically be able, you know, home house arrest or something like that. It'll get your kids off and you'll be able to keep parts of your company. I think that's what's most likely going to happen, because they already have him on election fraud. You know, they have him on the cover up payments that are surrounding that. They have him probably on conspiracy against the United States, whether or not with Russia. He definitely conspired against the United States and our elections. So you have that as well. And these are serious felonies. On top of obstruction of justice, which is now surfacing to become clear as day. And then everybody around him, I think that they're going to be, you know, indicted or flipped, or if they already haven't already. But this is just the beginning of it. This is the tip of the iceberg, you know, one of many. And again, I think that Mueller is going to present him with the, you know, we're going to indict you as a sitting president with these different charges. And then, you know, the party or the Gang of Eight will be aware of these. And then that will be the, you know, get out. And then Pence will become, you know, president at that point. But at that point, you know, it takes probably when there's a reset in this country, it takes one infraction or bringing it back up for them to have all the focus put on them and blame them for everything. So I wouldn't think that he, you know, would last very long, but most likely he would be he would make it to 2020 as the candidate.
Wow.
For the Republican Party is my guess. You know, it just depends on, I think he's smarter than most people think in regards to how sinister or, you know, he can be. He's pretty evil. Like he's, as you see, like Karen, his wife just started at a private school, you know, intentionally because it bans LGBTQ right. people from working there. And you have to sign a pledge as a student to not be gay, which is just absurdity. So all these things, you know, I think will add up. I just don't. Here's the one thing that I reserve myself with is the fact that I don't know if Trump will let himself go before he throws Pence under the bus.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
You know, like he probably will, like, think about who he's willing to throw under the bus to save himself to start. And so I just don't, he's got a file on everybody. He's got some of the best investigators ever. He does some of the best vetting on people ever. Incompetence is not something that he can, it's the card he plays, but in reality, he knows everything about everyone that works for him inside and out. And he uses that against them to coerce them in ways like, oh, you know, it'd be sad if this got out. Like, and so he does it in ways that are just, you know, screwballish. But my guess is there's a lot more going on here. I'm guessing somebody in the White House wore a wire, you know, that senior, like this is deep. And Mueller's a patriot. Mueller's on it. And again, he would have already left and submitted some kind of small report if it was something small. There's so much more. 95% to go. We're only about 5% there. So, you know, remember how crazy people, I know for a fact, people would look at me in like November of 2016. I'm yelling about Russian ties and they're like, are you crazy? And I'm like, no, he's like, he literally is a Russian agent. Me, Malcolm Nance, and some other folks, Sarah Kendzior, all talking about the fact that, you know, he, there's some kind of leverage over him. And now, sadly, it's worse than I ever imagined.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to just throw in there, Bob Seska and the late Chaz Pezianza were also talking about Russia in 2016, because Hillary was, and a lot of people weren't paying attention. You know, I mean, I remember her talking about it, but it wasn't really kicking in. And, you know, I used to live in Russia. I lived in Moscow in 1980-81, and I was there, you know, while it was communism and Soviet Russia. So I have kind of an understanding. I mean, I don't think that Putin is trying to turn America into Soviet Russia, but I think that, you know, he just wants to destroy our democracy. But being there firsthand, I understand, or I should say being there gave me that opportunity to see an entire nation just beaten down and too afraid to say anything. And I understand that it can happen anywhere. And that frightens me. But I was just, do you think though, because you said something about, I want to kind of go back about the Pence thing, that maybe Trump would throw Pence under the bus. But what about, I guess that he would try to make the deal with the FBI to not be thrown in jail. And the question I would have is, you know, what about asking the vice president to pardon him like Nixon did? What do you think about, I mean, where does that all fall in? Do you think he'll just focus on trying to strike a deal with the FBI?
I think that the crimes will be so bad that I don't know who would be willing to pardon him for them. Hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that it's going to be the same. It wouldn't be the same as, you know, what Nixon was up against. I think that these are crimes that border on treason. You know, the only fact that we can't charge him with treason probably is because we're not, you know, declared a war with Russia or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that the most likely scenario is he makes a deal with the FBI. If he makes that deal, I'm 100% sure that it'd be contingent upon that that never receives a pardon, that he's available to testify against people, that he can't plead the fifth, that he, you know, like he can't lie again about anything, in any of his testimony. He can't change stories. He can't, you know, pull back. He can't, you know, deny a request of him to testify against people. Like, you know, I'm sure that he can negotiate something, but I think the key here is that as of now, people want to get him out of office. Mm-hmm. And then they can clean up, you know, the rest of it afterwards. I think that's what we see coming. But I do see that, like, if he were not president right now, he would have been sentenced already. Like, he would have been indicted and convicted and already sentenced. If not making a plea deal, I'm assuming he would have made a plea deal.
It just makes me sick to think that, like, Don Jr. wouldn't go to jail, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's something where we have to, you know, we're going to have to deal with.
Right, we're just going to have to bite it. And
yeah, I, me of all people, I'd love for him to go to prison for a long time. But, you know, same thing with Cohen, like his testimony and things that he does may get him out of prison completely for all we know, you know, and he's been saving his cards, it seems. And, mm-hmm. you know, his relationship with Trump, unless it's some kind of weird long game that I've never seen before that is above Putin's level, you know, even he's responding to me now. I'm one of the few people that he's responded to. I inquired with him about, have you ever been to Czech Republic ever for any reason ever? And he replied with no. And then the other time he decided to retweet my sentiment of thank you, Michael Cohen, for ruining Trump's southern border trip or southern PR stunt today. And he retweeted that. And he also retweeted David Corn that day. And I'm like, okay, that's stuff you can't go back from. Like you can't, if you share my stuff, like, and David Corn's, you're in the doghouse. Like, your relationship is over. He's never going to forget that. Even if it was a game, even if he planned it and told you to do it, he still would get angry about it. it's an interesting, it's coming to a new level here, you know. And then you have Whitaker and Cohen testifying publicly, both I think the 7th and then the 8th of February. And
I cannot wait.
It's like going to the movies, only better.
they have all of our. I can say this: that Congress has all of our evidence. They've taken it very seriously. They have our recommended, just our like, here's questions that we would ask. Kind of thing, and you know, we get that to oversight, intelligence, judiciary, You know, now that Democrats are in charge, you know, I don't have people throwing my Russia report like Devin Nunes back in my face, acting like this is fake news garbage. Get out of my office. Like, this is, you know, it's being taken seriously, and it's great to finally, you know, see this happening. But I mean, like, the worst is yet to come, and it may not be what Trump does in office right now. It may be what he's already done and we don't know about. Mm-hmm. Like making money off of the kids, the $1,250 a night refugee kid beds, and him making a kickback from his friend's company. Like, that's going to be something where it makes America look terrible. Mm-hmm. So all these bombshells will come out and be uncovered, but it's just going to make America as a whole look terrible, and we're going to have to rebuild from there. The great news is he's so bad, he's so terrible, that it will help us. It'll be easier to rebuild the international kind of diplomacy that we had before, to do like an Obama reset and then build from there, and then build the trust. But it's gonna involve internationally. Like, they're gonna have more leverage of us. They're gonna be like, well, you're gonna have to bend because we had to deal with him first. Yeah. You know, so like, we're gonna have to negotiate down. And And this is going to hurt us for years, but we will be better for it. This is the most positive negative thing that's happened in our generation, you know, make us rebuild our democracy, us to integrate the fact that what happens on the internet affects real life, and what we do, you know, online, it does make a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, what we see, what we how we interpret things, and you know, we had to basically have our political 9/11 here so that we could open our eyes and be like, oh, like, what I'm seeing, you know, makes an effect on what I'm saying in real life. And it's hurting people. People are getting depressed from messages they get. They're getting directly attacked by foreign adversaries that are sitting in warehouses with military personnel, you know, trying to harass me off of the internet or something, you know, something along those lines. Like, you're going to see all these cases. And when people like myself testify publicly in front of Congress, that's when we present the whole new level of physical threats by Russia and other people, you know, and people who are, I guess, advocates for Trump doing the same thing. And when this stuff comes out, I think people will realize that this is not like us trying to make them feel fear. This is reality of, you know, people were spied on, Americans, and Trump let it happen. Mm-hmm. Like, no American president ever would ever let the Russian government, their embassy in the UK, tweet at an American who was born in Cleveland, basically a threat, targeting them because they're calling for a Mueller-like person to be appointed as special counsel. Like, and that's exactly what happened to me. And right after that happened, I became one of the most trolled accounts in the world.
Wow.
And so I don't think that there's any coincidence with that.
No.
But anyways, long story short, I think that he's, I think, again, he could already be indicted. But what they're doing is they're building the rest of the case against him so that it's all lumped together. But there's no way out for him here.
So you're saying like a sealed indictment?
Yeah,
I would assume that it's either a sealed indictment or they're on the cusp of completing it, and they're not completing it because he may find out that that exists or something like that. So I don't know exactly how they'll go about it, but this is not going to end pretty, because, you know, again, Mueller has to override all the propaganda. And so he's going to need visuals. So he's going to need arrests. He's going to need people going to prison en masse. He's going to need, you know, obviously there's people that are now under the microscope that we've known had been under the microscope, especially like Devin Nunes, that started to come out. And there will be more people that come out like that. And I'm guessing, you know, we have dozens of Americans that are headed to prison just related to the Russia scandal. And outside of that, I mean, you have people who are committing crimes like Pruitt while in office and his staff. And so you've got to think about how many people that accommodates. And then, you know, you go to Interior with Zinke, and it's like, and his staff, and everybody who was culpable, his wife, you go with Price and all everything he did. Yeah, Chaffetz and his ethics violations while he was in office. I mean, we're going to hold everybody accountable for every single crime they committed and make sure that their staff is flushed out. If they've already left office on top of it, it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. We're going to make sure that they get referred for criminal prosecution and see what happens, because, you know, a lot of times people will get off of it. But to research, you know, reset ethics, I don't care what party you are. If you break the law, you're not going to be in Congress anymore. And that's right. That's the new rule of thumb.
Right. Beautiful. Bravo. I loved it. That was like the most riveting five straight minutes of talking about how Trump and company are going down I've ever listened to, Scott. Thank you. You said a couple things when you started with that last one. You said that Trump let it happen. And it's a shock to think that any American president would let the Russian government interfere at the level that they have and do and did and blah, blah. I think he invited it to happen, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no question there, right? You do this, fuck up my country so that I can get the kickbacks on the kids who are in the you know, the temporary kiddie jails at the border. You know, and the list could go on and on and on. And you've summed so much of it up. I mean, essentially, everything he's done stems from his desire to, would you say, stay out of trouble with Putin and his crew, because this all goes back to the money where you know, Deutsche Bank was the only one that could loan him money because he had screwed things up so bad with every other lender in the world, and that means Russia is it that simple for just a lay person? I mean, I need to understand like how this whole thing got started.
Well, Trump already made over $1 billion in Russian money. Like, that's a fact for sure. And how that was done was via property. So they would buy property via an LLC or a sub LLC or five companies removed from the Kremlin. And it'd be an oligarch's money. They would overpay for it, or they'd slightly overpay for it, and they'd flip it around and resell it again.
Yes.
And so that's the key here, is money laundering. Him, whether he was knowledgeable of, or not, it was such an epic level of it. This is something that, you know, Mueller would be able to easily uncover.
Got it.
That's the biggest part of the money trail. So being beholden is Putin probably knowing, you know, what apartment was bought for how much from who, and having that. And if he exposes that to, you know, the United States government, that's where he's in the biggest trouble. Right. So I don't think it's going to be like a loan. If he needed $50 million, he'd be like, hey, can you buy these properties in Turkey, Panama, and, you know, these or whatever. Like, that's how they would split it up, to make it in smaller batches. And then no one ends up living there, and he ends up renting out the property that he just sold, which is, again, illegal. But you know, these are different things that he's done for a fact. And if you look up, I think they track $250 million in Florida and New York alone, in Russian sales of apartments. And so that's a lot of the trips were sales meetings where they would buy property in the United States that they never eventually used.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the key money trail is. That's where it all kind of started. He would make trips over there because he couldn't take Russian money directly. He knew that. So he would urge them to basically funnel their money through estates, and then he would try and sell that and flip it for them. Or, you know, they keep it, they'd own it, and then they'd resell it later. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, the LLC would go bankrupt, or, you know, after they sold the property, and then all of a sudden the money disappears to whether Cyprus or the Caribbean or something like that. I mean, this is the same thing that he does over and over again, but it's the smaller, it's like the, you know, $1 million, $2 million condos, but them buying like 100 of them.
Yeah. Okay. I just, you know, I think there's so much information coming at us, and I'm talking about, you know, America and anybody that's concerned, that it's hard to keep track of it all. It's important to know where it sort of all started. And, you know, it's terrifying. But, you know, who's surprised really with this sick F, who's in the White House right now, you know?
Sick fuck.
The schemes in 1982, I believe, is when his criminal nature started, when he hired a new lobbying firm for him. The first client for this lobbying firm was Donald Trump. And the people who ran that lobbying firm are Paul Manafort and Roger Stone.
There you go.
There you have it, baby. Full circle.
I want to ask you something, but everybody should watch Get Me Roger Stone, and you learn all about Manafort and Stone. And I had no idea how involved they've been in trying to destroy our country. But let me ask you, Scott, do you have any kind of timeline that you think some of the stuff is going to go down, especially with like Mueller and Trump being, you know, getting that proposition that you have to, you know, you either leave or, and then, okay. So do you have a timeline? And then if Mueller decides that he is going to indict him, do you think it's going to go to the Supreme Court? And then, you know, the issue of Kavanaugh and how they might vote. But first, do you have a timeline?
No, I do not have a timeline. I'm hopeful that it's in the next 3 months.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get anybody's hopes
up. You mean from
up.
Mueller, the Mueller report in the next 3 months?
No, I'm saying for the indictment exchange where,
okay.
You know, if he has indictable offenses like that. But again, I think it's going to be an onslaught that Trump can't control. Twitter can't control for him. And you know, no foreign adversary can control, because, again, this is a guy who, I was shot behind enemy lines, a guy that went behind enemy lines to get a person who, or a soldier that had been killed, and retrieve his body by himself.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who's in the Army Ranger Hall of Fame and is a U.S. Marine, and he's one of the only U.S. Marines to be in the Army Ranger Hall of Fame. He is as far of an American patriot as you can get. It is a guy that, you know, years ago, Democrats mostly probably would not have agreed with. They think he's like a Bush crony or whatever. But, you know, when the reality struck of me, I mean, I've investigated everyone that's involved with Trump, anyone that's linked with Trump, and we found two people that had no conflicts and no sort of criminal history whatsoever, and that was Rod Rosenstein and Robert Mueller.
Interesting.
So I think that, it's, again, he's not going to waste his time. His entire legacy, everything he's ever done in his life, will be what he does here. Mm-hmm. And he would have already exited the building, and all these other people who have spent all this time and effort in this would have already left, or there would have been massive turnover. There would have been, you know, a lot of things, like they would have moved it quicker along, I guess. There's a reason why he's redacting all these things. There's a reason why he's still taking witness statements. There's a reason why there's, you know, I don't know how many probes, but there's at least four different criminal probes running at the same time. There's a reason why he expanded into the Middle East now and the ties to Russia and Trump there. This is all expanding. And remember when Trump said this would end at the end of 2017? Mm-hmm. Then he said it would end in 2018.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
It's 2019. So I don't think that – I think one thing that people forget is, even if Trump is gone, Mueller probably will still be there. And he probably still will be investigating everything.
Wow.
Well through 2020. I don't see his probe ending anytime soon, because it's so massive of a scale and so important. But it's not going to happen where it's like, oh, we're done, and then they like hand a report to DOJ and they close up shop. That doesn't happen. It's most likely where he summarizes the crimes that Trump committed, and that's in a memo, and then that's given to Congress, and then it's introduced into court documents, or it's handed over to Congress, and they read it out loud into the to make it public, or someone, you know, releases it, you know, against.
Oh my God.
But I just don't see how that. It's not going to be like, so, oh, we're done. Here you go. Here's a report. That's a myth, because you know, Mueller hasn't even confirmed he's doing a report or multiple reports or anything. He hasn't showed his hand. That's all Giuliani and Trump propaganda.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Most likely, again, you know, he's either going to do a memo where it lists Trump crimes, but that's not going to stop the probe. None of this is going to stop what Mueller's doing. So it's going to be interesting to see where he goes, because no one knows the law and how to make sure that it gets out in the open, because he knows that this is most important probe that's ever been done in American history ever.
Yeah.
So he knows that he's in charge of it, and he knows that it's not just about the criminal charges. It's also about the PR and fighting massive amounts of fake news and propaganda, and making sure that you slowly and methodically discredit all of that. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it like this, remember the false sexual allegations against him? Mm-hmm. Remember how quickly he put that to bed?
Yes.
So that's a good example of how he's going to do it. And so because he was very quick on the move, and remember how quick the media listened and scoffed it off? Like,
yes.
Jacob Wall is such a freaking idiot.
That douchebag and his friend with the fly of his pants down during a freaking press conference. What a bunch of idiots.
He blocked me. Hey, Jesus. Wait. I want to follow up with the whole, what about the Supreme Court? Do you think that if Mueller indicts him as a sitting president, that it will go to the Supreme Court? And if it does, the Kavanaugh situation? I mean, I know Kavanaugh's not the only one, but what do you make of that?
I bet Kavanaugh, you know, votes against Trump.
Interesting.
I know Roberts probably would. I really don't see, I see them siding with Mueller. I don't see anyone siding with Trump. It's nonsense. It's rule of law. It's their legacy then. I don't think that there's going to be, again, this is another Giuliani Trump kind of myth of like, it's going to be up to the Supreme Court, and that'll decide yay or nay. That's not going to happen. Like, it's going to be, there are just thousands of little tidbits that, you know, hit every single person of different charges, arrests and things like that. You're not going to be able to prevent it with one thing or the other. Trump wants to make it so that it's conclusive, but that's not, it's just not how it's going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same thing with the dossier where he's like, everything in it is false. Everything's a lie. And my first response to that was a report saying, okay, first of all, people in it, the people exist. The people are real. The positions are real.
Right.
The cities in it exist. Like the countries in it exist. And then you go over timeline and some of the ideas of it. Okay. Carter Page did meet with Rosneft. Russia did pay for Jill Stein and Flynn to be over in Russia. The accuracy of facts or whatever. And keep in mind, that's like 1/10 of the full version, or even less of it. That's just a summary. They do this with everything, where it's like, oh, it's going to be the one report, and we're going to stop it from coming out. And it's like, well. No, I don't think that.
They're going to do the counter report to Mueller's report.
Not only that, Barr's going to amend it. Barr's the new thing, right? Yeah. It's this all or nothing nonsense, and they know that it doesn't have to be all or nonsense, like all or nothing kind of nonsense. Like, it can just be, 55 different charges against so and so, and then it could be. An indictment that comes out that releases all the information. It could be like, there's so many different possibilities for Mueller. He's not going to take the easiest route that Trump would assume. It's just not going to happen.
Obviously he's anticipating what Trump is going to do. So would it be though that Barr would not be, so you're saying that, okay, so let's say Barr gets confirmed, and then it's up to Barr to decide what to tell Congress in that report. You're saying that that Mueller is already ahead of that and will make sure everything is known no matter what Barr does.
Yeah, I don't think that anyone, like Whitaker, obviously has sort of recused but not really recused, but at the same time, he's not in charge of anything. Mm-hmm. Rosenstein is still in charge of it. So anything that they're saying, that they could possibly do, I'm sure that there's different things that Barr could try and do. I think that they also he actually sort of respects the rule of law more than Sessions, more than Whitaker.
Jesus Christ.
He sort of does.
There's three spoiled cheeseburgers or hamburgers sitting outside of a restaurant for weeks in the sun. And it's like, you get to choose between the three, and you choose the one that looks less green.
Ah,
That's where we're at. Is well, they're all spoiled hamburgers, but it's
hamburger.
There's no hamburger,
cheeseburger. Okay, I just want to throw this out there real fast. McConnell and Graham, what the hell is going on?
I know you're investigating McConnell. I saw that you posted that.
Correct. The so I can tell you now, our report should be out this week. It is a report that exposes more of McConnell's Russian ties to Russian money, especially. And it can be assumed after reading what we'll release, I could safely assume he's under the same amount of scrutiny by Mueller as Nunes or Graham is. And, you know, again, this is the same guy that helped some of the funding, $2.5 million that went to McConnell. Mm-hmm. We exposed that in early 2017. Mm-hmm. This Russian oligarch who acts like he's Ukrainian for the obvious reason. So I can't say Russian oligarch. You know, he gave millions to McConnell, Ryan, you know, Scott Walker, mm-hmm. it all Rubio, Graham. And so you have all this money. I think it was $800,000 to Graham. All this money floating around, and it's like, well, why is he giving so much money to these people? And then, you know, I backtrack and I find this guy spending time with Josh Kushner in Russia the same time when the campaign was kicking off, and he was there with Deripaska's wife and other people in Russia. Again, Josh Kushner,
the brother.
The brother that acts like he's a progressive who is not. We have video of him inside White House events, you know, hanging out with Kellyanne Conway and others. This is not a progressive. He's not on our side. That's a BS kind of PR stunt that he went to the Women's March or whatever. He's married to Carla Kloss. But it's nonsense, because what were you doing in Russia when the campaign kicked off? Yeah. I know what he was doing there. He was there for a technology conference. But, you know, anyways, it's not normal for everybody to be linked to Russia. Like, this is just not normal. This is not like they're so important. Like, there's 10 other countries that you should take into account before you even consider Russian money, because they have more money and more influence. So, I just don't see, you know, this ends badly for everybody involved. Mm. Like, there's no way out for a lot of these folks. But, you know, we'll in the McConnell report, I think that the worst things in it are actually not the Russian related stuff. It's the campaign finance violations that we found. And so right now we're up to three, and they really, I guess I can't get into it far, but I can say that it exposes a kind of way that they set up multiple entities to take in more money from the same person via different LLCs. Mm. And it would be legal if they didn't coordinate on each of those contributions, like give this much to this super PAC, give this much to this super PAC. And it seems like they did just that. And that is very illegal. So especially if you're running his main campaign committee. So, you know, we've got a full throttle campaign against McConnell. We obviously have a few billboards. A third one is going up today, and that's a Mitch shutdown, open the government now billboards. And they're in Louisville, Lexington, and then another city I'm going to forget the name of. They're up in main thoroughfares mostly. Look, one of them's next to a Walmart. it's just like right there.
And Trump will be out on some rider drinking wine. Some like little riding machine eventually in Kentucky. That would be awesome. You know what I want to ask you before we let you go? I know Steph might want to have a question, but before we end it, what are you thinking about for 2020 going up? No, wait, two questions. One, do you think Mitt Romney's going to primary Trump? And two, who do you think might make it to 2020, or who do you like right now?
On the Democratic side.
Yeah, on the Democratic side. So will Mitt primary Trump and then the Democratic side for 2020?
I think if Trump is still in office in 2020, no one's going to have a shot. No way. Like, that's no.
But do you think that Mitt Romney will try to primary him?
No. Okay. No. I think Trump has consolidated his power. He's not going to have, he will have so many people bashing Mitt into the ground. And, you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to defend Mitt? Probably not.
No.
So he's going to be, it's going to be another Trump cornered rat. Yeah. So I don't think that Mitt has the guts to either. He doesn't have the guts to tell Trump to reopen the government, really.
Exactly. Like, you know, guy.
And we already have three senators, Gardner, Collins, and I'm going to forget the third.
Scott?
What's that?
Is it Scott? Rick Scott?
Oh.
You're like, what?
I was confused there. But,
Oh, my God, I'm so dense. That's hilarious. Okay. Yeah.
I thought you couldn't hear me. I thought you could.
No.
But, so for 2020 with Democrats, if Trump is the nominee, I'm guessing Biden will be the Democratic nominee.
Hmm.
That's my guess, just because I guess they would probably want the safest bet for some reason. And they assume
is not working for us.
I've been over this with them. That is not the route to go. They're thinking, well, white guy, you know, that takes away from the white guy. And I'm like, that's not how it works.
No.
That's not how any of this. But anyways, so 2020, I welcome all Democratic candidates to the fold. I hope that more people step up, and I'm going to use the Trump line. We'll see what happens. But I've been in touch with a lot of folks and a lot of folks who are thinking about running. I personally don't have a favorite. My candidate that I would automatically support if she announced would be Michelle Obama. But everybody says, well, she's not going to run. And I'm like, well, that's what they all say.
They all say, exactly.
I think it would be too soon in her mind. Like, she wouldn't want to do that right now. And so, but that would be an automatic of
yes.
You know, I'm on board. Let's
that
roll.
That would be so awesome.
I don't even know if I could handle it.
I could handle it all over the place.
I might combust with joy. I could handle it too. Well, okay. Now that I'm, you know, you kind of, it was a bit of a boner kill. I'm not going to lie. When you said Biden, I know. I love Joe Biden. I love him, but I am getting my head around people of color, capable people of color, because we need a shot in the arm and people need to be uplifted in that way in this country, given all that's gone on and all of the disparaging remarks that Trump has made alone against the Latino community, but just his racism and that he's given license to sort of under the surface racists to just come out, right? So anyway, I got to get over that. But if it is Biden, and I'll get behind Biden with a bullhorn bigger than you've ever seen. But is it going to be Biden and Kamala? Like, in your mind, Scott, come on.
I don't know. I would assume, I mean, I would, if it were a male at the top, I'd be thinking about, you know, a female in the second spot there. I think a female should be in a top spot.
I agree 1,000%. But given that you just said you think it's going to be Biden, I'm running with that scenario for a sec.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if it were Biden, I would assume that the best bet for him would be to have Kamala on board for the campaign. But I doubt it would be anyone else. You know, it's not going to be someone that it's not going to be like Tim Ryan. Or some, you know, it's not going to be that kind of ticket. Like, we need a diverse ticket.
We need
to represent America more so. So I'd rather have Kamala at the top and Biden second ranks. But that's
Well, the thing that I'm not sure about is, I mean, I don't know that he's going to be able to get that much excitement and make it out of the primaries. But, you know, and go on to be the I know if the DNC gets behind him and all of that, he's got that going for him. But it just seems to me that. I think at least the way I'm looking at it is right now it's his name recognition is got him so high up in the polls. But as the, you know, campaigns start kicking off and everybody's announcing and, you know, when we start the primaries, it's hard for me to imagine that he's going to make it. But What do I know? I thought Hillary was going to be our president.
So. If I had to guess, if I'm put on this, like if I had to guess what the ticket would be, then I would guess that it's Kamala Beto. And here's the thing.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
With Kamala on the top, though.
Yeah.
So I know that Beto's the front runner right now, but that's always a jinx. So,
right.
You know, they're already knocking him for something about the Constitution or some kind of comments. But I could see that as being a winning ticket. But again, it really is about, we can't have the same thing over and over again. We have to represent the diversity of our democracy and make sure that we're representative of everybody. And I really think that Kamala has something special going
on
for
her.
So we'll see what happens. I won't be supporting anyone in the primary because it goes against what the coalition stands for. You know, where the whole idea is for us all to join together whenever that primary is done. So we'll talk about the different candidates and ask people who they're interested in and things like that. But me personally, I won't be supporting or working for anybody until they're the nominee. Same with the rest of the folks of the coalition.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of what, I mean, I'm kind of wondering if I'm even going to, you know, not that my endorsement means anything, but just making it official, like, oh, I'm supporting this one. I think I got so burned in 2016, looking back, because initially I supported Bernie, which I no longer support him. I mean, if he were to be the Democratic nominee, I would feel forced to support him, but I don't trust him anymore. And so, and I would, whoever the Democratic nominee is, I will support. But it's like,
of course,
you know, I got shit because I supported Bernie. Then I got shit because I supported Hillary. I think I just kind of want to watch from the sidelines at this point. I may change my mind later, but, yeah. I want to watch and see who gets the nomination, and then I'll support them.
And I'm going all in from the get-go, okay? And I might switch it up partway through, and I don't give a rat's ass, because whoever gets the nomination in the end, I'm with them.
Yeah.
But Scott, and Scott, thank you so much for doing this, by the way. This has just been a joy.
I know, we love having you on.
Yeah. I saw Kamala speak on Saturday night in San Francisco, and she was in conversation with Mayor London Breed of San Francisco. And I got to tell you something, that I wanted to see a warm side, a relatable side of Kamala that, you know, you don't see that in the Kavanaugh hearings, and you don't get to see her when she's kicking ass and taking names and protecting our democracy. But what I saw was, first of all, one of the brightest people I've ever heard speak in my life, but in a relatable way. People and she was in her hometown, you know, in San Francisco. It was beautiful, and I got the feels. I mean, it was it was so uplifting to see a capable woman of color with the right resume and the right work experience and the capability to do the job. And then that was coming off of watching Julian Castro announce that he's running in San Antonio. And I've had my eye on those Castro brothers for years. And I think they are people who we need to pay attention to. But as a person of color and as a Latina, I also was uplifted to a place that I have not been in the past 2 years. And it's time. Okay. But I have this fantasy that it's going to be Harris Castro. And I know it's a long shot, but America needs to see this.
Yeah.
And me and my people need to be able to feel uplifted by capable people of color, because that is who we are. And we need to start representing this amazing country of immigrants as such. Okay. And now I'm off the stump.
All right. All right. So before we wrap up, Scott, why don't you tell people what you're doing or where to find you, any of that social media good stuff?
If you have the internet, then,
then you can find Scott.
Me. You can find
He's
me.
If fun
you go on Twitter, if you go on Twitter, then you'll just see me pop up in your timeline. No, it's at Funder, F-U-N-D-E-R. I used to be a fundraiser back in the day. When I first signed up for Twitter, I was like, it's a short handle. I'll just make it this. And then, never expected.
And then you became Mr. Popular.
Oh, yeah. It, well, you know, that goes in waves. It goes in waves because, you know, you say something like Biden, might be the nominee, and then, you know, you lose followers.
We
and
still
then...
love you. Are you kidding me?
Well, I personally, I helped run the draft committee for him in 16, and same thing with Warren before that, because I wanted to have more candidates running for office. And, you know, same thing with John Cooper helped me run the Biden draft committee. And the whole idea was, you know, Nate was a burner. So he had, you know, Bernie guys, Obama guys, like, and people who had helped out Biden, Warren. And the whole point of the coalition was to get everybody together on the same page and back, you know, Hillary at that point.
Right.
And make sure that we protected or not protected her, but like made sure that we stood up for her, mm-hmm. In ways that she could not, being that, like, you know, when she was getting death threats, like people needed to file legal complaints and people needed to, make sure that it was pointed out in the news. So anyways, long story short, you can find me at Funder on Twitter. And then, you know, that's got all my links to everything we have. My podcast is, doing wonderful now. We're going to restart that in the beginning of February. My last interview was with Rob Reiner, the last two before that, with Rep Gwen Moore and then Rep Steve Cohen. And right before that was, Rob Goldstone, who
wow,
holy Christ!
Take a listen to that. He talks about how he saw Ivanka, possibly saw Ivanka outside the elevator for a few minutes, and so that's in the Intelligence Committee's hands now. Oh. Get him to speak out. But we'll see where it goes. But yeah, you can follow me. Make sure to obviously support your podcast, because without your help and people like y'all, like I would never be able to do the coalition, couldn't do their work. We would just be pummeled by the right.
Yeah, well, constant.
So thank you for what y'all do.
We appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Yes, and thank you for coming on. Okay, everybody, go follow Funder and the Democratic Coalition. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Democratic Coalition. And then look up Scott's podcast. Alrighty. Well, thank you, Scott.
What a wonderful day. I've got some spring in my step, let me tell you what. Damn it.
Oh, my goodness. Woo! All right. So let's see. Before we head on over into And Another Thing, I just want to remind everybody to visit willowgrove.com. To get some really cool products. And over on And Another Thing, we're going to talk about AOC, and which is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, how I fell down yesterday in the snow, and we're going to discuss Gillibrand, because she's running, and I wanted to address a tweet that I found about her last night.
Okay, and I also want to wave my flag for people of color a little bit too.
Yes,
because we can't just brush this to the side.
No, we cannot. All right. So then I guess that's it for the first show of 2019.
Damn.
Thank you for listening. And again, don't forget, in 2 weeks, from today, we're going to have Molly Jong Fast. And next month we've got Charlotte Clymer booked, and then she's going to be, oh my God, I knew Charlotte as Charles, and I'm still trying to get used to saying she. So anyway, she's going to be on a Saturday, and then we're going to have Jen Kirkman on our normal Wednesdays. So anyway, we look forward to seeing you then.